The ball is tipped, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star. One shining moment is all on the line. One shining moment.
What's up, college basketball fans, and welcome back to a new episode of CBB 365. I'm Adam Hipsky, alongside, as always, Patrick Dallahan. And in today's episode, Patrick Dallahan sits down with Old Dominion head coach Jeff Jones and talks about coronavirus and all things leading up to his 2020-2021 season. Then Jeff Jones will depart, and Patrick and I will discuss Dan Gavitt, the NCAA Senior Vice President of Basketball, issuing a statement on Monday that the Division I Men's and Women's Basketball Committee hope to have a decision by mid-September whether or not sports this fall will be delayed over concerns over the coronavirus pandemic. It's a great episode on tap for you guys today. Thank you all for tuning in.
Okay, and today we are joined by our first head coach ever on the podcast. Joining us now is former UVA Cavalier and head coach of Old Dominion University, Jeff Jones. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Hope you guys are doing well.
Same to you, Coach. So let's get right into it. Your father was a college head coach for 8 years and led Kentucky Wesleyan College to the NCAA D2 title in 1973. What were some of the biggest things he taught you that helped you during your playing days at Virginia and your own coaching career?
You know, I think, number one, I've been very fortunate throughout my playing and coaching career to be around some great people. You know, I had great coaches to play for. Mm-hmm. I think I learned the game from my dad. You know, maybe less about coaching, but just learning the game, my love for the game. If there was one lesson I think I came away with from him is toughness, you know, physical and mental toughness. You know, as a player, you can't go very far in this game if you don't have those qualities.
You were part of some really successful teams in your playing career at UVA. You were obviously 102-28 with a pair of trips to the tournament and a Final Four berth. When you look back on your days in Charlottesville, what do you take away?
Just, you know, great memories. And, you know, there's certainly I can think back and come up with, you know, big wins and, you know, games against North Carolina. You know, it seemed like for my last 3 years at Virginia, you know, North Carolina and ourselves were constantly battling it out in the ACC. But the older I get, I think the things that I remember the most about my playing days, especially, but also my coaching career, is the relationships.
Yeah.
You know, I was very fortunate. I had wonderful, wonderful teammates, you know, guys like Jeff Lamp and Lee Raker and Terry Gates and Ricky Stokes and Ralph Sampson.
Yeah.
You know, you know, that makes it really, really special. And to be able to stay in touch with those guys to this day is, you know, is very important to me.
And speaking of Ralph Sampson, obviously one of the all-time talents in the history of college basketball, what was it like to be on the floor with a guy like that?
Well, it was amazing, and it warms my heart to hear you as a young guy to talk about how great Ralph was, because I think a lot of people overlook him or have forgotten how great he was. I mean, he was a three-time National Collegiate Player of the Year.
That's just unheard of nowadays.
Well, number one, nobody stays that long.
Yeah,
but even then, I mean, as a collegiate player, people don't understand that the difference between Ralph Sampson and Tim Duncan wasn't just a little bit as a collegiate player. Obviously, Duncan had, you know, a far better pro career. But that just shows you how good Ralph Sampson really, really was.
Yeah.
He was a great teammate. He never really wanted to stand out in any way other than through his play. You know, he wanted to be one of the guys off the court. So, you know, I've always valued that relationship and have great respect for him in that regard.
Yeah, we did a Wooden Award winners bracket on our Instagram page, and a lot of our followers are Duke fans, so he didn't get very far, which I thought was unfair. But it is what it is. One of the greatest college basketball players ever, one of the best in ACC history, just extremely overlooked, and that's a shame.
Yeah. Well, I can understand why Duke fans don't like Ralph. I can remember, I think his last game against Duke, we beat him by maybe 40. So I can understand Duke not liking Ralph Sampson.
That's a beatdown for sure. But anyways, you're drafted by the Pacers in 1982. But the very next basketball season, you were back at UVA coaching under Terry Holland. What led to you getting into coaching?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people just assumed because, you know, my father was a coach. You know, some folks referred to me as a coach on the floor. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to play. If I had a chance to play, I was going to play as long as I could. I was drafted by Indiana. They already had 13 guaranteed contracts, so I knew things weren't going to work out long term there. I was fortunate that I was picked up by Golden State and actually had made the roster before injuring my ankle. I was out about 2 weeks, and when I came back, they had replaced me with Michael Ray Richardson, another name from the past. And so, you know, I got cut from Golden State, I believe it was in December. Coach Holland, I was very, very fortunate. Coach Holland had saved me a spot on the coaching staff. And I went back and just jumped into coaching. And, you know, again, I keep saying I'm very fortunate, and I really was. He didn't have to save that spot for me. So, you know, he gave me that chance to get into coaching, and, you know, it's something that that I loved, you know, since that time.
I was going to say, it's obviously worked out pretty well for you. Coaching under Coach Holland, one of the most successful coaches in the university's history, what did you learn from him as a coach, basketball-wise or IQ-wise or play-wise? Like, what did you take away from him?
Well, Coach Holland was a very, very smart guy, intellectual guy. I learned from Coach Holland, the ability to delegate. I mean, he gave people, he gave me, we had, you know, other great coaches. Dave Odom was an assistant on the staff when I was an assistant. Jim Larrañaga was an assistant on the staff when I was an assistant. Seth Greenberg was with us for 1 year.
Friend of the show, Seth Greenberg.
On the staff. So, you know, I was around a lot of great basketball minds, but what Coach Holland did was give everybody a chance to do their thing and to contribute. I thought that was a great learning lesson. And then the biggest thing with Coach Holland was not to get too ingrained on, his system, so to speak. You know, he always felt like there were lots of different ways to be successful, that it was our job to figure out a way to put our players in a position where they can be successful. And so it wasn't about us or our egos. It was about the players that we had on hand and making sure that we did our job so that they could go out and do well.
Yeah. I was going to say that sort of speaks to UVA's teams nowadays. They don't have a bunch of guys that are like in your face, talented, like the Dukes of the world, where it's like they have Zion and all these guys. They have a bunch of guys that mesh super well together and really just play well based off of teamwork and not as much off of individual play.
It's worked pretty well, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's worked pretty well for Coach Bennett up there. National champions 2019. Moving on, you've had a somewhat different career path when it comes to the likes of coaching. You started at an ACC school, really a blue blood, and you've moved to mid-major schools like American University and ODU. What's the difference between coaching at a UVA or compared to an American or ODU?
Well, two things immediately come to mind. The paycheck is different.
Yep.
But I think the spotlight, and the scrutiny is different. You know, at Virginia, I was the youngest head coach ever in the ACC at 29. It happened in a very unusual way, and we probably don't have enough time to talk about it here. But I got to be the head coach at my alma mater. You know, my dream job, and we experienced a lot of success. But at the end, the bottom line is if you don't win, it's time to move on. So, things didn't end well there, but I still really appreciate that opportunity and that experience. I think it made me a better basketball coach. I took a year off doing some TV and trying to treat that year as a sabbatical.
Yeah.
I went around and I saw a lot of different programs, went to American University, a program that hadn't seen much success. I think 9 straight losing seasons before we came in there. Between our first and second year at AU, we had the largest turnaround in terms of number of victories.
Yeah.
And we had over those 13 years we had some pretty good success in the Patriot League, but the spotlight, the scrutiny wasn't nearly what it was in the ACC. But yet the basketball was the same. The approach and the commitment to winning was the same. So once we stepped in between, inside the lines and we're coaching, the demands were the same. The expectations were the same. It was just, at a lower level. Uh-huh. Coming to Old Dominion was after having been at American for 13 years, I could have stayed there, another 10, years plus.
Yeah.
But it was time for a change, and Old Dominion presented a different challenge. The thing I'll say about Old Dominion is that while we are clearly we're a mid-major, we're in Conference USA, our facilities are, if you're looking at mid-majors, we're at the very, very top of mid-major facilities. Our practice facility, our arena, the support from our our alums and donors is great, and quite honestly, and I know it's many years later, but the scrutiny at Old Dominion in 2020 is just as high, every bit as high, as it was at Virginia in the ACC back in the 1990s. So,
right.
We're very well supported and very excited about Old Dominion basketball and what the future holds. Although there's a lot of questions about that, I guess, certainly with the coming season.
Yeah. Speaking of that, you've obviously been very open with your fight with prostate cancer. You were obviously diagnosed with it in 2015, and it resurfaced in 2017. How special was that first tournament bid with ODU in 2019 after all you've gone through during your tenure in Norfolk?
Well, it was very special. I mean, it was for me, but more importantly for the young men and the people that support the program. We had been so close. And the truth is, we just weren't quite good enough to get past Middle Tennessee. We had some really good teams and over a 5-year period, I think we were the top 20 in the country in number of wins. But Middle Tennessee was just a little bit better than us. They had a great run under Kermit Davis. And so that was very frustrating, being good and almost getting there, but not being able to get to the dance. So when we won in 2019, the CUSA regular season championship and the conference tournament, that was very exciting and very special. We had a good group of kids, of young men on the team that, a number of them had been through that frustrating time together. So to be able to get there and, reach that pinnacle almost was a great feeling.
Considering your past health concerns amid this whole coronavirus crisis and all the concerns with the upcoming 2020-2021 NCAA season, do you have an idea whether you'll be coaching on the sidelines this year?
Well, if we're having games, then I'll be coaching. I have had to be very careful and cautious. Mm-hmm. I think it would be irresponsible for me to not. You know, I've probably, I don't know if it would actually be a true quarantine, but I'm closer to quarantining than I am to anything else.
Yep.
I still, you know, our players have been back for a short period of time, and you know, we've got some very strict protocols going on, but I'm kind of staying away. I mean, I'm in touch with them. I'm talking to them, yeah, every single day, but I'm going to kind of bide my time. And as you know, the regular season is, as the, yeah, school year starts, I'll start getting more face-to-face time with everybody. But I do think I've got to be responsible and be very, very careful, because I am one of those that, there's a bunch of us out there for a bunch of different reasons, but right, you know, I am, I guess, immunocompromised is the term. So I want to be safe, and I want to be able to, you know, coach these guys and be able to make it through and be healthy for the whole year. And you know, I owe it to my family, and I've got three young grandkids, and mm-hmm, so I don't want to do anything and be careless. So you know, it's just something that is pretty much on my mind in everything we do right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all we've got for you, Coach. Thank you so much for coming on. It means a lot. Stay safe, stay healthy. We want you to be able to coach this year. We want your guys to be able to play this year. We just want the sport to come back.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate it. And kudos to you guys. It's great seeing, you know, young guys doing what you all are doing. And
thank you.
I've you know, done a lot of this kind of thing, and y'all do a really nice job. So keep it going, keep working at it, and best of luck. Stay safe.
We will, Coach. Thank you. Big thanks to Jeff Jones, our first ever coach to ever come onto the podcast today. First ever head coach, I should say.
Head coach. Shout out John, yeah, Linehan.
But big thanks to Jeff Jones. Obviously, really good talk with him about this upcoming season and his past experiences as a coach. Speaking of this upcoming season, Dan Gavitt, the NCAA senior vice president, issued a statement Monday that Division I men's and women's basketball oversight committees hope to have a decision by mid-September whether the sport will start on time or be delayed due to concerns over the big COVID-19 pandemic. Kind of a pointless announcement, I feel like.
I think we all know that in mid-September they're going to make a decision later.
The bureaucratic inconsistencies of the NCAA will disallow them from making any sort of comprehensive decision.
I have a question for you guys. We talk about how we don't think the announcement will come in mid-September, that they're going to push it back. Which is fair, you know, I don't think they will either. But let's say they do make this announcement mid-September. Do you think that it'll be an announcement saying that we're going to have men's and women's basketball? Because if I'm the NCAA and they do make that decision, I think that's a step in the right direction for men's, yeah, basketball. Because if they were canceling it or not starting it on time, I would say they push it back. You know, I mean, thoughts on maybe the NCAA actually making that decision.
If there is a decision in mid-September, it will be good news.
I agree.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So I guess that's what they root for.
Yeah, I feel like the schools that they need to have, like, heading it are, like, University of Michigan, the best schools that are playing right now, because as far as academics go, you've already eliminated, like, three or four, like, unbelievably good schools with the Pac-12. So they're just not even going to try to play.
The Pac-12 might try to play, but they're not going to.
Football's out of the question for them. But basketball now, because they did the January 1st thing.
They've lost non-conference play, the Pac-12. If they're not going to allow any sports before the new year, right?
Yeah.
Then they've lost non-conference play.
But we already knew we were headed in this direction due to the way college football was going, canceling non-conference first. Obviously, some conferences are still in it for the conference-only schedule, but the Big Ten has gone away with everything. The Pac-12 has gone away with everything. So we knew this was coming for college basketball, and the Pac-12 was the first to really take charge and cancel the non-conference. And they didn't say no non-conference, but by...
How are you going to play non-conference if you're not going to play at all during 2020?
Yeah, that's true. I was going to say, well, they did kind of say, go to hell, non-conference. We're just not going to play at all.
And I think it was a little premature, canceling athletic competition until January 21st or January 1st. But what I don't think was premature was canceling non-conference. And it basically is the same. I'm looking at Arizona State's schedule right now, and their first conference game was January 4th, which means that I think the Pac-12 does their scheduling a little bit differently by not scheduling any conference games, which is not what other conferences do.
I know the American is January 1st, too.
Is that when they do their...
The ACC has been, in recent years, has done... Like, Syracuse played Virginia the first game of the year last year. Like, the very first game on ACC team schedule was a conference game last year.
Yeah, so it goes back and forth. And it varies by conference.
They did it to kick off the ACC network.
Mm-hmm. It was a doubleheader. They had another game going that night.
And I believe they were going to keep that this year. What the Big Ten was to football, the ACC will be to basketball.
Mm-hmm.
It will hinge on what they do.
But I also think at the same time, I think it also, they work together. We saw it last March 12th when we lost all of our sports, was going into that conference tournament week. It was Friday morning, and it was going to be mostly quarterfinals for the conference tournaments. And those heads of conferences were on that call, talking about when to pull the plug or not. And obviously that was a much more dramatic attack to the process by pulling the plug all in within hours. And this is a little bit more drawn out process because, we're talking months from now. When back then in March when they were working together, they had an hour. You know, they had less than an hour to make their decision. So I think you're right a little bit, but I think it's something to keep an eye on is to see how well the conferences work together. And if they still do, the situation might change how they handle it just because, you know, they have more time and they can talk. They probably have a lot more resources available now that they, have gone through it a little bit this summer.
I would like to think that the ADs could work together in basketball like the ADs worked together in basketball when this first thing all really... But look what happened in football. Those are the same ADs. The AD doesn't change because we're talking about a different sport.
Yeah, which
Presidents of conferences don't change because we're talking about a different sport.
I don't...
It was a free-for-all. It was Pac-12 cancels the whole season. Big Ten cancels the whole season. SEC has no intention to cancel. ACC, Big 12 are going to press on. All these mid-major, like there was no working together in football. And yeah. I really hope it's not like that in basketball.
If we know anything about the SEC, we know that they're not going to cancel. Like them out of all conferences, you can pretty much guarantee that they're going to try to play.
As the ACC does, others will follow.
If they have more time, you know, we talked about in February, at least I talked about in February, they work together. You know, we're not seeing that as of right now. So that's something to keep an eye on for basketball, too, that, you know, maybe those conferences don't work together. And like you said, the ADs and the presidents and the and there are some people that take a closer eye on each sport. I mean, there's like you talk about Dan Gavitt. I mean, he's the whatever vice president for men's and women's basketball. Like there are people. It's not just the ADs. I mean, there are people designed for specific sports, but at the end of the day, they're lower on the totem pole than, you know, the ADs.
Look, if the schools don't want to play, the schools aren't going to play.
We saw Duke do it last year before they actually canceled the NCAA tournament and everything else. They pulled their hat out of the ring before everything got canceled.
Can I give you guys a proposition? We're sitting here talking about non-conference schedule just because football did this, as if non-conference schedules actually mean anything.
They can.
My favorite example is South Carolina. South Carolina is not allowed to play Clemson because they're not in the same conference, yeah. Even though they are 200 miles away.
Less.
2-3 hours. South Carolina is, however, allowed to play Texas A&M because they're in the same conference, even though that's halfway across the country.
That's why they need to do regional bubbles.
That's what I was going to get into. If we were going to make some sort of bubble, like if we did college basketball regional, would it be possible to scrap conferences altogether for 1 year?
That's just unrealistic. I mean,
no, it's not.
I know we're speaking out. No. There's no way we see a bubble in college.
There's so many places that it could happen.
Goodman and Rothstein both reported. We talked about this in the last episode. We talked about what if the conferences do a bubble. Literally,
no, I'm saying
less than 24 hours later, they talked about major conferences looking at doing bubbles.
I'm speaking
the East and the Big Ten were looking to do a bubble.
I'm speaking of region, like conference realignments. That's not going to happen.
So can we combine two conferences and do a double conference bubble?
ECC Big East Conference.
Can we just call it the Big East so that Syracuse can be in the Big East?
That's more possible.
You want Syracuse to be in the Big East so bad now.
There are teams in the ACC that are not ACC teams.
Syracuse, in my opinion, is not an ACC team. They don't play like...
They're a Big East team.
They do not play like an ACC team, that's for sure. I think that if we were going to divvy it by region, you'd go ACC, Big East. You'd go SEC, Big 12. Then you'd go Big 10 plus Dayton plus
For the mid-majors, though, like, if the A-10 is going to choose to play, Dayton is forced to stay with them. But, like, we saw in football, like, a ton of the mid-majors dropped out first. So if the A-10 were to drop out because none of the major conferences wanted to help them, then might Dayton say, okay, screw it, we'll go play in the Big Ten for 1 year? This is all hypothetical. And like Adam said, probably not going to happen.
Yeah, probably not going to happen, but it's been proposed.
Not going to happen, period.
We can't rule it out because two people reported it. Two major people reported it.
Not happening.
Bubble could happen. I don't know if they're gonna. I don't know if double conference bubble is gonna happen. I don't know if regional bubble is gonna happen. Bubble could happen.
Regional, there's no way.
UNC
regional makes the most sense.
Look, UNC went back to school this week.
Then they all got sent home.
Coronavirus. Michigan State just went online for the rest of the term. North Carolina still intends to play college football. So if they can play college football on campus and take classes online, that's essentially a bubble, is it not?
It is.
If it exists that schools will play sports and let kids take classes online while they do it, that happening for basketball is very much a possibility.
Yeah, it is. But there are some kids, like seniors, that value their educations that won't want to do the bubble because they want to feel like a student. Like, I know that some of the guys in Villanova want to be able to play at their school. They want to be a student first. They value their education. Other schools, other seniors do that too.
I don't know about you guys. I have trouble believing if you take a senior basketball player, a four-year basketball player at a major school and say, here's a chance to play your senior year of basketball. Or you can say, nope, I'll pass on playing my senior year of basketball. For a lot of the four-year guys, that's the last chance they have on the big stage.
These kids do value their education. It's not like they're the top prospects that are skipping class, taking finger painting. These kids do value their education. And obviously, I'd hope that they'd want to play their basketball season too, but they want to feel like students. And once you take the school element away from them, like the actual classroom element.
What I'm saying is why I just talked about North Carolina and why I just talked about Michigan State is that if the school is already online, what difference does it make? If you're going to be taking your classes online, whether or not you're playing basketball in a bubble while you do it shouldn't matter. If it's a question between go to campus and go to class or play basketball in a bubble, then I understand. But I think if that's the question, the bubble won't be happening.
So before we wrap up, we just wanted to remind you guys that the NBA draft lottery is coming up on the 20th, and that is a few days or so from the date that we're recording this. That's big news for us, and in the future, we're going to have a lot more content and guests related to that on the show. So for the listeners, just keep an eye out for that. And that's all we have for this week of CUB 365. As always, I'm Patrick Dallahan with Adam Hipsky and producer slash college basketball extraordinaire Jake Klein. We'll see you guys next week.